capital is legitimate political discourse. I mean, there's been a loss of total perspective. And it is, of course, a shameful day. But what we ought to do is look at all of the causes of it. Partly, we have to look at the causes of social media, where there were specific targeted threats of assassination. And some of these social media companies like Facebook sat on that, did not give that information to law enforcement. But beyond that, we need accountability, not just of the people who were out there rioting or insurrectionists, but of the strategists, the people who plotted this. We haven't gotten that to them yet, and that's what the commission needs to do.
Ro Khanna, we want to thank you for being with us. The book just out, Dignity in the Digital Age, Making Tech Work for All of Us. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, hundreds of millions of extra dollars. Quite a predicament for Oregon lawmakers. What will they do? Oregon's also about to get a windfall in wildfire relief money. And what's the latest with the student loan freeze? We have an interview. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 10th, 2022. I'm Annette Newell. Thank you so much for joining us. Oregon state legislators in the short session will have $800 million more dollars to work with than they originally thought. State economists told legislators on Wednesday that there was much more tax revenue to work with than they originally predicted. This means new funding for plans currently being deliberated in the one-month session, but it also means money coming back to taxpayers. Economists estimate that the state will send about $900 million back to taxpayers in 2024 because of a kickback law that returns some tax money back to taxpayers when they are 2% more than expected. Where did this extra money come from? Well, some came from greater corporate tax revenue from businesses increasing prices and from greater income taxes tied to rising wages. Estate taxes and lotteries also brought in more money than expected. More revenue means more projects the state can fund, like addressing the housing crisis, getting more folks back to work in needed sectors, and, as one Republican senator proposed, paying more to police. It also means, though, that for the everyday person in Oregon, their dollars don't stretch as far as they used to. Oregon is set to receive more than $250 million in disaster relief funding aimed at wildfire recovery. With more on the story, here's KBOO's Josh Salem.
The U.S. Forest Service in Oregon will get more than $260 million in disaster funding to aid in wildfire recovery. H.R. 5305, the Extending Government Funding and Delivering Emergency Assistance Act of 2021, passed in September. It was a continuing resolution extending monies for many expiring programs, and it also provided supplemental appropriations for activities related to national disasters. Oregon Senators Merkley and Wyden both supported the act, which offers more than $1 billion total for recovery efforts after events like wildfires, hurricanes, and tornadoes. In 2020, more than 1 million acres of Oregon land burned in the Labor Day wildfires alone. Merkley served as chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee making decisions on funding the Forest Service. He pointed out Oregon has been devastated by catastrophic wildfires over the last 3 years, and that the additional $200 million or so will help restore landscapes, rebuild trails and access points, and restore forest resiliency to reduce fire risks. The Biden administration is also releasing $3 billion to reduce wildfire risk through selective logging and prescribed burning. Wyden said, quote, "Oregonians know in painful detail how wildfires have ripped a destructive path through our community statewide in recent years. I'm glad these federal funds will help our state recover from these disasters," end quote. About $78 million is earmarked for the Willamette National Forest and more than $76 million for the Mount Hood National Forest. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The student loan debt freeze has been extended for months, but will it be enough to help those intended? KBOO's Aurora Biggers has more on the story.
Originally set to resume February 1st, federal student loan repayments for 42-plus million Americans are now slated to resume May 1st, 2022. We have student loan hero counselor Andrew Pentis with us to talk about the freeze. Thank you for joining us, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So to get started, I'd like to know, right before the holidays, President Biden announced that the current moratorium on student loan payments that was set to expire originally in January would be extended until May 1st, 2022. What can you tell us about why Biden would extend the loan repayment freeze?
Yeah, it's a major surprise in retrospect, because the fourth extension, Biden had called the final one. So this fifth one definitely caught many borrowers by surprise. But I think given the Omicron variant during the pandemic, as well as rising inflation in the economy, probably pushed the administration to reverse course and decide to extend this moratorium on federal loan payments a fifth and perhaps final time.
And what effect will this 90-day extension have nationally?
Yeah, so it's more of the same in states beyond Oregon, where borrowers are getting an additional handful of months to sort of reacquaint themselves with their student loans. And it's particularly important for borrowers in other states who may be more likely to be experiencing a change in federal loan servicer. Some government contractors, such as Navient, have decided to leave the student loan industry. So millions of borrowers will not only be learning how to resume making their payments, but they may be doing so with a different loan servicer.
According to a student loan hero data study, the average student debt balance for borrowers in Oregon is $34,076. Student loan portfolios total about a little over $20 billion in Oregon. How does this extension specifically help Oregonian borrowers?
Yeah, so there's over a half million federal student loan borrowers in the state of Oregon, and they have an average monthly payment of close to $300. So this moratorium on payments has essentially allowed those borrowers to pocket that amount of money every month and use it for other areas of their budget, or perhaps to save up for when they will eventually have to resume those loan payments. So you can imagine very quickly that it's been very helpful for those borrowers. At Student Loan Hero, we estimate that the average Oregonian borrower will have saved about $7,400. When you think about the moratorium spanning from March 2020 all the way through its final point in May 2022.
Do you think that there will be another extension, given that this is, already an extension on an original extension? Do you foresee that taking place again when this one is up after 90 days?
Yeah, I think it's unlikely, but to be fair, I would have said the same thing a few months ago about it being extended a fifth and final time, and that's just because the Biden administration was very steadfast in saying that it wanted borrowers to get going in their repayment. I think in the announcing this fifth and final extension of the moratorium, Biden himself really challenged borrowers to do their part. He said, you know what, I'm throwing you a bone by extending this moratorium. I expect you guys to get a handle on your loans, contact your federal loan servicer, figure out what's the best next step for your repayment. So I certainly think in an ideal world, the Biden administration would like to see all those borrowers resume making their payments come the spring.
Sounds like the freeze is pretty dependent on the course of the pandemic.
Absolutely. I think the Biden administration is sort of weighing all the factors that affect the finances of the average American family. So, in the context of not only the pandemic interrupting the average employee's wages, but also the fact that those wages may not be going as far in an economy that's experiencing new levels of inflation. The Biden administration is certainly aware of that, and they want to make sure that borrowers have that extra room in their budget to be able to afford their more basic needs. And student loans obviously are a big responsibility for borrowers, but it shouldn't come after being able to meet those more important needs like paying for shelter and food and so forth.
Speaking of the Biden administration's plans, Biden originally ran with a platform supporting canceling student debt, but we haven't really seen that from the federal government. We haven't seen them taking any steps towards this. Do you see these loan repayment freezes as a step towards some canceling of student debt?
I do not. I think mass student loan forgiveness and the way that President Biden and other progressives campaigned on it is still a very controversial issue that does not have bipartisan support. And we've seen that the Biden administration has already struggled with perhaps trying to pass less controversial legislative packages in Congress. So certainly I do not anticipate the Biden administration really changing its footing on the mass student loan forgiveness proposal. What we've seen instead in the first months and year plus of the Biden administration is that they've really been enthusiastic about targeted student loan forgiveness. So they've made it easier for certain groups of borrowers, including military veterans, disabled borrowers, public servants, and others, to be able to access forgiveness. But certainly that may not be the mass student loan forgiveness that draws so many headlines.
You said it's unlikely, but should there be some sort of mass student debt forgiveness program, what kind of impacts would forgiving student debt have on our economy, as well as we were talking about earlier, the individual households' finances?
Yeah, so the impact would be huge. And I think people who are on both sides of the debate about whether to forgive loans would agree on that, that if student loan forgiveness does come to fruition, certainly depending on the amount of relief that's awarded, it would be a life changer for millions of federal student loan borrowers. So, you know, if a $10,000 dose of forgiveness came to fruition, some borrowers would see their debt disappear overnight. Others would see it shrink by a significant percentage. So certainly that would be a big deal both for borrowers in Oregon and beyond.
Certainly.
Certainly the best advice if you're working towards getting ready for repayment in May is to begin taking those steps now. Don't wait around. Contact your federal loan servicer, confirm your eligibility for this ongoing moratorium. Talk through potential options that you might undertake come May to put yourself in the best position to repay your loans. For some borrowers, that could include enrolling in an income-driven repayment plan that would cap your monthly dues at a percentage of your income. For other borrowers who are not feeling ready to resume payment, they might opt for a deferment or forbearance that would continue a pause on their loans. And then for borrowers who are doing better financially, they may look to certain resources or options like student loan refinancing. While interest rates remain very close to historic lows, federal loan borrowers who are no longer benefiting from this moratorium might decide to refinance their loans to a lower interest rate to save a lot of money with a private lender.
Great. And if you're just now listening, that was Andrew Pentis from Student Loan Hero talking about the federal loan repayment freeze. Thanks for talking with me, Andrew.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And for KBOO News, I'm Aurora Biggers.
The Portland Pickles mascot, Dylan T. Pickle, was stolen by porch pirates, and the baseball team has taken to social media to try to get him back. The Pickles are a summer collegiate wood bat baseball team that play at Walker Stadium in Lentz Park. The mascot recently flew to Santo Domingo for a Caribbean baseball series, and team management says the mascot baggage was lost by Delta Airlines. It was later delivered to the team in Southeast Portland, but they say they never got the message. Instead, they have video footage of someone taking the bag off the porch containing the mascot, Dylan T. Pickle. Since then, they've taken to social media to call for the Pickle's return, saying there will be no questions asked and no hard feelings if the mascot is returned. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. Tonight features an interview with Bob Salinger from the Portland Audubon Society about conservation efforts in the Elliott State Forest. Then, later at 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low down to 43 degrees. Tomorrow, those clouds will continue with some peaks of sun and a high of 60. Today in history, in 1989, Ron Brown was elected as the chair of the Democratic National Committee, becoming the first African-American to chair a major political party. Our quote of the day is from American playwright Arthur Miller, who died this day in 2005. He said, quote, "It is rare for people to be asked the question that puts them squarely in front of themselves." Some groups are promising to file a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency over lack of air pollution enforcement. As Eric Alatis reports, this impacts PacifiCorp's power plant southeast of Grand Teton and Yellowstone National Parks. That plant is Wyoming's number one polluter and the nation's third biggest source of haze pollution.
Environmental groups filed a notice of intent this week to sue the EPA over the agency's failure to enforce the regional haze rule under the Clean Air Act. The rule aims to protect national parks and wilderness areas in Wyoming and across the nation from air pollution that reduces visibility. Rob Joyce with Wyoming's Sierra Club chapter says pressing the EPA to do its job will also help limit the number of days that people with respiratory problems have to stay inside.
Reducing and eventually eliminating haze pollution will improve public health because the same pollution that muddies the skies also harms our bodies. Reducing haze will reduce the number of yellow, orange, and red air quality days.
An EPA official said he was not able to comment on pending litigation, but noted that public comments are being taken until this Friday on the agency's proposal to deny a request made by Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon to delay plans to reduce more than 3,000 tons of pollution from two Jim Bridger units by the end of this year. PacifiCorp's Jim Bridger Power Plant, south of Grand Teton and Yellowstone National Parks, is Wyoming's number one polluter and the nation's third biggest source of haze pollution. Joyce says the state of Wyoming and PacifiCorp know they are violating clean air rules, and if the agency charged with enforcing the Clean Air Act does not hold states accountable, his group and some 38 others are prepared to force the issue in federal court.
We understand that the EPA is trying to resolve the issues at the Jim Bridger power plant, but what we need them to do is fulfill its obligation to protect clean air from harmful pollution.
Joyce says getting the EPA to enforce the Clean Air Act also will help states across the West avoid year-round wildfire seasons and other impacts of a warming planet. Haze pollution, mostly from burning fossil fuels, currently obscures the views in 90% of America's national parks.
Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, Yosemite, these same sources of pollution are also contributing to increasing wildfire severity, drought severity, to climate change, all on top of impairing visibility in our parks.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Multiple studies have cited exposure to radio frequency radiation from cell towers as a factor in the collapse of bee colonies in recent years. Suzanne Potter reports that a growing body of scientific studies shows cell tower radiation harms wildlife.
A growing body of scientific studies shows that electromagnetic fields from the extremely low frequencies common to power lines and radio frequency radiation, the kind from cell towers and mobile devices, may be harmful to wildlife as well as humans. A 3-part review of the literature recommends the feds regulate electromagnetic radiation as pollution. B. Blake Levitt is author of 2 books on the subject and lead author of the study. She says RF radiation, even at low levels, caused harm in every animal model studied, especially bees and birds.
They depend on the Earth's natural magnetic fields for orientation, migration, food-finding abilities, mating, nest and den building, territorial maintenance and defense.
The telecom industry says its products and towers are safe and comply with all federal regulations for human exposure. The study authors want the feds to create exposure standards for wildlife and plants to designate the air as critical habitat and then regulate electromagnetic radiation as an energetic pollutant. Study co-author Albert Manville is an adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins and a retired biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He says we can't let industry profits override environmental concerns.
Yet The industry has proceeded going ahead. Now we have 5G rolling out in massive quantities without due diligence to determine, are these sources of radiation safe not only to humans but to wildlife? The answer is no, they're not.
Dr. Joel Moskowitz is director of the Center for Family and Community Health at UC Berkeley. He says the problem is only going to grow.
The industry is putting up something like 800,000 small cell sites around the country, roughly doubling or tripling the current number of cell towers. So our ambient levels of exposure are going to increase dramatically within the next few years.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The House reaches a new deal to fund the government through mid-March. Talks with Iran over nuclear weapons reach a critical juncture. And an Oscar-winning actress defends victims of violence before Congress. With more on these stories, here's today's edition of 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
And nothing hinders our national security more than funding our national priorities in piecemeal fashion.
Congressional leaders hammered out a bipartisan deal to boost military and non-defense budgets. But New Hampshire Senator Jeanne Shaheen criticized the reliance on continuing resolutions, saying it erodes military readiness. The House passed a stopgap measure Tuesday to avert a government shutdown next week, which the Senate is expected to approve to keep cash flowing through March 11th. The Vienna nuclear talks are at a crucial point. The White House believes it has until the end of the month to salvage the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement. Former President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the deal in 2018 and reimposed sanctions. Iranian-American journalist Nigar Mortazavi contends it was the wrong move.
It didn't achieve any policy goals. It basically didn't achieve any change in policy in Iran, even though it inflicted a lot of economic pressure.
After a closed-door briefing, a group of senators expressed alarm about how quickly Tehran could attain a nuclear weapon. The European Union wants to continue diplomatic talks over the Russian military buildup along the Ukraine border and called for President Vladimir Putin to pull back troops. He refused unless NATO and Western allies reduce their Eastern European military presence. Nearly 6 months after the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, 8 million Afghans are on the brink of starvation. With some Taliban members still classified by the U.S. as terrorists, the international community has frozen billions in assets. At a Senate hearing Wednesday, former British Foreign Secretary David Miliband said innocent civilians are being punished.
Some of our staff across Afghanistan begged me to be blunt. Current policy will indeed mean that the starvation crisis kills more Afghans than the past 20 years of war, which is an extraordinary indictment of the current policy mix.
Now to Canada, where officials warn things could get ugly quickly with the trucker convoy protest blocking the Ambassador Bridge. It supports 25% of U.S.-Canada trade. Demonstrations against a Canadian vaccine mandate have popped up in other cities from Vancouver to Montreal. Oscar-winning actress and activist Angelina Jolie struggled to hold back tears while testifying on Capitol Hill. She urged Congress to renew the Violence Against Women Act, which it has failed to do for more than a decade. She argued victims of failed systems should be angry.
You're supposed to be calm and patient and ask nicely. But you try staying calm when it's as if someone is holding your head underwater and you're drowning. Try to stay calm when you're witnessing someone you love being harmed.
Last year, the House passed a reauthorization bill to provide grants for state and local government programs that address sexual assault, domestic abuse, dating violence, and stalking. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
South Dakota state lawmakers try again to get a bill approved to create Native-based schools. The St. Regis Mohawk tribe keeps its mask mandate as New York lifts indoor requirements. And the Alaska State Tribal Recognition Bill will be heard in the state Senate. With more on these stories, here's today's edition of National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In South Dakota, Senate lawmakers are passing a bill that creates and funds community-based schools centered on Native American cultural curriculum. A similar proposal passed the chamber 2 years ago, but failed in the House. Supporters hope this year is different. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger reports.
It's the third year in a row Senate lawmakers have voted on creating Ocheti Chacoan community-based schools. The proposal allows two school districts to sponsor an Ocheti Chacoan school in the first 5 years the bill becomes law. those schools would be steeped in Ocheti Chacoan essential understandings and standards. Ocheti Chacoan means seven council fires and refers collectively to the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota people. The proposal is brought by State Senator Troy Heinert. The Democrat from Mission says the proposal is meant to give Native American students an alternative educational experience.
I'm just trying to give our kids a chance to learn in a culturally relevant manner and have that strong connection to who they are as an Indigenous person, but still, gain all the skills and abilities to function in regular society as well.
Heinert says misinformation killed the bill when it made it to the House 2 years ago. The bill calls for a trial run of two schools, which is a reduction from bills that have come up in years prior. Heinert says he expects results from two schools will prove more are needed in the future.
We know that if we can get two schools going and we show the gains and the successes that we think we're going to see, that number will grow. But we just have to have the opportunity to do it.
The bill now heads to the House. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierce, South Dakota.
A bill in the Alaska State Legislature to provide for state recognition of federally recognized tribes is being heard in the Senate State Affairs Committee Thursday. The State Recognition of Tribes bill was read for the first time in January and referred to committees. It would not give tribes new power since they're sovereign. It aims to have the state acknowledge that sovereignty. The state of Alaska and tribes already work together in a government-to-government capacity through tribal compacts. The state has a compact in child welfare. According to the Bureau of Indian Affairs, there are 229 federally recognized tribes in Alaska. Thursday's committee meeting will be streamed online. A tribal regalia bill in the Utah legislature recently passed in the Senate. It had already passed the House. The bill ensures Native students can wear traditional dress, a feather, beaded attire, or moccasins during high school graduation ceremonies across the state. A similar bill was signed into law in Arizona in 2021 to allow Native students to wear traditional dress at graduation. The bill in Utah now awaits the governor's signature. New York is dropping requirements for face coverings indoors, but not the St. Regis Mohawk tribe. The tribe Wednesday responded to the state's announcement to end its mask mandate for public spaces. The tribe will continue its mask requirements for public health against COVID-19. The tribe's Emergency Operations Center and health services are reminding community members and guests that masks are still required in all public places on the reservation in New York. According to the state, effective Thursday, the statewide indoor business mask requirement is lifted. Mask requirements for schools will continue and will be reevaluated in March. Several other states are dropping mask mandates as COVID-19 numbers decline. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, February 10th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Aurora Biggers. The producer is Annette Newell. Our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Native Voice One and the Public News Service. Our director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. So if you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
Hey everybody, thank you for tuning in to Coast Range Radio, a radio program of the Coast Range Association. My name is Andrew.